Morning, everybody. So, some weeks ago, we had a child dedication, and that day we planned to have 6 children dedicated, and 4 were sick that day. So, we did 2 that day, and I had planned about a 7-minute sermon that day, and I just kind of stretched it out. But today, hopefully, we have all of them here. So we have 4 we're going to do today at the end. But I was thinking, okay, so, I preached 2 sermons on child rearing in the last couple months, and this is going to be the 3rd one. But I want to do a little different approach. In the last one, when we talked about the charge to the parents, and we talked about, the attitude they should have about having children and what it means to have children, and then we talked also about, what are you going to teach them? How are you going to teach them? You know, what's important to pass on to them? And I thought today we'd change up gears a little bit and talk to parents here and potential parents here and say, those are the things we do in terms of our attitude towards the children, in terms of teaching the children. But what about us? You know, what should be in our hearts? What should be our attitudes? What should be the character that we represent as parents when we teach our children? Because children are amazing. They are little sponges. They are sucking up. They are imaginative. They come up with new stuff every day. The other night, Renee and I were babysitting, and Henry decided that I was going to be a dinosaur egg. I don't know. So he wrapped me up in a blanket, and I had to be at the door to his room and knock. And he would open the door and go, "Oh, a dinosaur egg." And then he would roll me to the living room and break me open. But this time he needed grandma's help. So Renee came over and they're rolling me to, which for an old guy is painful, but they're rolling me to the living room. And on the way he goes, "So we're going to get there, grandma, and we're going to break the egg open." And she goes, "How are you going to do that?" And he says, "We're going to use a giant hammer." And my loving wife begins to laugh hysterically. And pretty soon he's got me parked in the living room. I hear him in drawers and cabinets looking for a hammer. I'm starting to sweat. Fortunately, all he found was a little plastic hammer, and he beat on me with that till the egg cracked and I emerged a dinosaur. But that's children, right? That they're learning. They're taking in everything, and they have great imaginations, and they're constantly watching and observing and picking stuff up. And so as parents, what's that mean for us? And so I'm going to give you 3 words today, and we're going to talk briefly about each of these 3 words before we bring the families up here to have a prayer over those wonderful children. But the first word is going to be stand. The second word is going to be walk, and the third word is going to be run. And so parents, the first word that I would give you today in being a good parent, in being a wonderful parent, is stand with God. And we live in a culture today that wants us to kind of play both sides. Do your religious thing, but also fit in here. Don't be different. Don't be separate. Be part of us and do the things we do. And we want, all of us as human beings, we want to fit in. Go to any school in the nation, college or high school or junior high or grade school, and everyone dresses alike, right, as much as possible because you want to fit in. And they've done tests on this. They did one test where they had a room with 10 kids in it, or actually it was 10 high schoolers, and they had 3 lines on the board. And they would say, okay, we're going to point to each line, and when we get to the line that you think is the shortest line, we want you to raise your hand. And there's only one test subject in the room. The others were preset to vote for the wrong size line. In other words, obviously not the shortest line, but 9 of the 10 were supposed to vote for the wrong line, the same wrong line. And they found 80% of the time the test subject would vote along with the people that were voting for the wrong line. 80% of the time, the test subject would vote for the line that wasn't the shortest, even though it was obvious. Why? Because we want to fit in. We want to be part. If you remember in the book of Joshua, chapter 24, Joshua is He's speaking to the people here at the end, and he's led them faithfully all these years. If you remember, he was Moses' lieutenant all those years in the desert, and then he led the people in the land. He led them in warfare. He led them in conquering. He led them in taking the land. And here he is at the end of his life, and he's about 110 years old. And he's speaking to the people, and he says this, fear and serve the Lord. But if you don't want to, if you're going to go after the wrong gods, pursue them with all your heart, that's you. But then he goes on, he says, but as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. In other words, we're going to stand for God, even if we're the only ones to do it. And every one of us has opportunities to stand for God where it means standing alone, because there's times where no one else buys in to what it means to be godly, to what it means to stand for right, to what it means to be moral and ethical. And there's every one of us is going to have, fortunately, we have the body of Christ. And so usually we don't stand alone. Usually we stand in unity, which makes it a lot easier. But sometimes we're called to stand alone. And if I could stress one thing to parents, it really does matter that we choose who we're going to stand for and we stay the course. That we're consistent in our lifestyle of saying, no, I'm going to do what God calls me to do, no matter what it costs. No, I'm going to say the right thing, no matter what it costs. Our children are watching us constantly. As I said, they're sponges, and they pick everything up. Everything. And, I mean, how many of us have said something in anger or inappropriate or whatever, and you hear it back from the kids? I remember the first time Josh cursed, and I was shocked. I'm like, where did you hear that? Oh, my friend Rebecca. Where'd she hear it? Her dad. I'm like, okay. We all can make that mistake, and the kids hear it and pick it up. I with my grandkids, whenever they cry, I'll hold them, and I'll pat them, and I'll go, it's a hard life, buddy. And the other day, Harlan was on the floor crying. I wasn't there, and Henry walked up and patted him and went, it's a hard life, buddy. They hear what we're saying. Never forget. They hear it, and guess what? They repeat it. And they watch what we're doing, and they repeat it. Our kids are little copycats. And, there's things we see in our kids, and we're so proud. Yeah, they take after me. Look at that. Aren't they wonderful? They see us doing it, and they do it. There's other things we see in our kids, and we're like, where'd they get that from? How dare they do that? That's bad. They shouldn't be doing that. But if we really look in the mirror, we're probably going to see, yeah, they got that from me too. So, parents, the first thing I would stress above everything else is that you stand with God, even when it means standing alone. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, whatever it takes. Joshua's saying, whatever you want to do, do. If you're not going to follow God, fine, but we're following him, even if we stand alone. Stand with God. Number two, walk. Walk. Walk how? Walk in integrity. You know how important it is to be a person of integrity? We don't value it, I think, like we used to because we see so little of it. How many of our officials in government do we respect and say, that's a person of integrity? How many bosses do we respect and say, he's a person of integrity? How many even of our friends do we look at and go, I want to be like that because that's a person of integrity? Matthew chapter 5, Christ is speaking about giving oaths. And he's saying, look, don't make a bunch of oath promises. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. In other words, you should be such a person of integrity that when you say yes, people know it's yes. That's what you're going to stand with. You're not going to lie on them. You're not going to cheat on them. You're not going to do something else. When you say yes, you mean yes. When you say no, you mean no. You stay the course. You walk in integrity. I had a young woman the other day, I think it was just yesterday, gave a testimony. And she said, she didn't grow up in a Christian home. But she started going to church at like second or third grade with friends. So So she kind of did the religious thing. She was going to church, but she said, I really didn't hear the gospel. I really didn't understand. She said, what I saw of people at that church is what they did on Sunday was totally different from what they did the rest of the week. That's not walking in integrity. And it wasn't until she got to college and she met a female student there who was just out and out for Jesus Christ and walking, living her life in accordance with her talk, that she was impacted for Christ. Integrity matters, and we don't value it. We need to value it. I was reading that in 2007, there was a family garage sailing in New York, and they found a bowl they bought for $3 and took it home. And it sat in their home just as a decoration until 2013. And they thought, you know, I wonder if this is worth anything. And they took it in, and it was a 1,000-year-old Chinese vase. And they put it up for auction. They were told, we think you can get almost $200,000 for it. And so they put it up for auction. It sold for $2 million. Now, do you think that the family that sold it for $3 would have sold it for $3 if they recognized the value of that vase? Absolutely not. But they didn't see the value in that vase. And sometimes I think that as Christians, we don't see the value in lives of integrity. We know that we struggle with sin, and so our attitude is kind of like, oops, I did it again. Oh, well. We know that it's this battle that goes on in our lives, and so we don't think of it as any big deal. But let me tell you again, the children are watching. And if we aren't living lives of integrity 7 days a week, then we shouldn't expect our children to live in that same way. I remember I was in Austin once, and a parent was just irate at his child. And he was like, how many times have I told you not to do that? I was in a store watching this. And it was a grade school kid. And the kid finally looked up and went, but Dad, you do it all the time. What do you expect the child to learn? If our lives aren't lives of integrity, if we aren't walking in accordance with God's word, if we aren't consistent in what we do, we can't expect our children to be consistent. You know, they say in child-rearing, consistency is one of the most important things. You can't be one way one day, another way another. You know, you take a puppy, and one day you cover it with love and pet it and stroke it and feed it, and the next day you beat it and withhold food and everything else. You have a really messed up, dangerous dog when it grows up. And yet we see in our world today that parents have lost their way. And they are raising children that are dangerous and afraid and anxious and fearful and everything else because there's just been this inconsistency in their lives. Now, every problem kids have is not, oh, the parents weren't parents of integrity. But I will say this, consistency in your lives goes a long way towards creating a sense of security and peace in the life of your child. And if they see you living for Christ day after day after day, even when it's really tough, it makes Christ much more appealing to them. But if they see that deep down inside you haven't really bought in, why should they? You know, oftentimes I think that we don't live those lives of integrity because we really don't agree with God on a number of the things that he said. You know, I'll do the things that I agree with God on, but when I don't agree, I'm going to do the things I think. Well, that's really making ourselves God, isn't it? That's making ourselves the determiner of what is right and what is wrong, and what we are called to and what we're not called to. We begin to doubt God and say, you know, someone brought up Job's wife to me. I think it was this morning in Sunday school. Getting old at some point this week, but I think it was this morning some of the guys, one of them brought up Job. And you know, you think about Job, I mean, he went through horrific stuff, but he wouldn't give up his worship of God. He said, though he slay me, yet will I serve him. You know. But his wife, she went through the same stuff. The only thing she didn't have that we know of is the boils that Job had, but she lost all her kids. She lost all the funds and the servants and the animals and the good food. And, you know, she was just like Job. but it affected her differently. I think with her, it created a sense of distrust, a sense of how dare God, how could God, why would God? And so her response to Job was, hey, you know, just curse God and die. Everything's over. Our life has ended. We've lost everything. This is worthless. You know, the last thing is just say, God, we curse you. God, we hate you. God, we can't trust you. God, you're not a good God. You're evil. Or whatever that means to her. But Job's response was, should we accept only good from God and not evil? In other words, God is God. He knows best. Living lives of integrity show that we trust that God knows best. You ever say, Dad knows best, Mom knows best, our kids? We should respond to God that way. And our kids see us doing that to God, and they respond to us in the same way. So, we have stand with God, even when you stand alone. We have live or walk in integrity, which means consistency, because our kids pick up on that too. But the final thing is run the race to the end. Run the race to the end. You know, parenting is a tough, tough gig. You know, there's all the excitement when you're going to have the first kid and you're decorating the nursery and you're getting everything ready and you just know you're going to have the perfect child. I knew we were going to have the perfect child till we had one. And after that, it was like, well, I know now how this works. Still excited about it, but I didn't think it was going to be easy anymore. And it's not. It's a long slog, and it's hard. Because it's something God has called us to, though, we should do it with joy. And we should stay the course. You know, they say the Boston Marathon is 26 miles long. I can't imagine running that far. I can't imagine walking that far. But these guys run it as a race. But on the 19th mile, there's a hill, a long sloping hill called Heartbreak Hill. And they say it's on that hill that most people fail. Because they reach that hill, they've accomplished a lot, but they still have a lot of miles to go. 7 more miles, and they're already reaching the end of their strength. And what's ahead of them is this long uphill run. I did cross country very, very briefly in my life. Found out I did not like it and was not good at it. But I remember the course we ran in the Philippines, the finish line was about a half mile run. And it felt like straight up. You could almost touch the ground in front of you while you were running. I mean, that's what it felt like. It was just, and it was like, I just lost heart every time I ran that. It was like, I can't finish this hill. And it wasn't until I never did a good job of finishing. I'd always stop and walk until I finished cross country. And then I went, wait a minute, I can't let that defeat me. And so I started running on my own after cross country was over. And every night we'd go over to play basketball and they'd take a carload over and I would run over. And it was a long run. It was like 3 miles. But it was that last half mile. It was just brutal. And I remember I would barely be running. I mean, you could probably have passed me at a walk. But for me, it was running. But I made it because I just stayed it. And when I'd finished that last bit, it was a circle around this flat track. And it was like, that's so easy. That's so easy. But usually I lost heart at that really hard slope. They say on the Boston Marathon, people lose heart at mile 19. In child rearing, sometimes there's some really tough hills. Sometimes you think, I don't think I can do this. You know, there's never enough money for the month. Children become rebellious or resentful. Physical sicknesses hit. Other things are happening in your life too. And that's the whole thing as parents. It's a full-time job, but you still have other jobs to do. You know, the kids think that 24/7 is what you should be with them, but you still have to earn a living. You still have to pay the bills. You have to keep the house up. You have to fix things. You have to keep the car running. You have all this other stuff. And sometimes it's just overwhelming. And you want to opt out. I need a break from this parenting thing. But the Apostle Paul, at the end of his life, Timothy says, I've run the race. I've finished the course. And he goes on and says, there's a crown waiting for me. In other words, there's a reward for believers that stay the course in their walk with Christ. There's a reward for parents that stay the course, I believe, both from God, but in the results with your children. Will we have children that aren't perfect? Yes, we will. Will we have children that rebel? Yes, we will. Will we have kids that might not even choose Christ? Yes, we will. But we're still called to stay the course with our kids. We're still called to live lives that honor the Lord, to choose God first, to be people of integrity in our walk, and to keep running as parents. That means you never quit. That means you do the hard stuff too. There's a lot of parents in this day and age that are opting out of parenting because it's so hard. And they're looking to society to raise their children. And it's not working well. As Christians, we're called to something completely different. We have a responsibility and an obligation to raise kids, pointing them always towards Jesus Christ, our Savior and our